Well, I'll tell you a little bit about me. I'm Jen Farmer. I'm originally from Florida. I grew up on the beach. I had my picture taken the other day, and I looked at it on Facebook and thought, I am so pale. I've never been this pale in my life. So I miss home a lot, especially during this time of year. But one of the absolute perks of living where I do, and I'm in Memphis, is that the Church of Christ in this area is amazing. And I've not grown up with, you know, ministry, really. There wasn't a youth minister where I grew up. There were three boys that were my age, and we were, the four of us, we were the youth group. And so they had sleepovers, and I was not allowed to go. And they were together all the time, and we'd go to the movies, and then they'd go do stuff afterwards, and I'd just go home. And there were women, older women, that took an interest in me and made it a point to teach me about being a good woman, a good Christian woman, and what it meant to be a good wife, and what it meant to be a leader in church, and what it meant to study God's word, and all those kinds of things. So I feel like I had a lot of people ministering to me as a young person, but they were not youth ministers. And so being in this kind of an atmosphere, I'm just amazed at what the church looks like here, and how big it is, and the way it grows and moves and operates. That also means that I'm pretty new to it. I've been married 6 years. My husband was a teacher when we got married. And so I married someone who I thought was going to work like 8 to 4 and then be home every evening and every weekend. And we'd have 2.5 months during the summer, like all to ourselves to do whatever we wanted. And then Jamie's laughing at me because ministry is the exact opposite. We were married about 2.5 years, and he just had this really strong feeling like, this is not what I'm going to do forever. It's not even what I'm going to do for 6 more months. And I like consistency, and I like 5-year plans. And so making a big change like that was very hard for me. And so we prayed, and I was thinking, he applied for a job at the zoo, and he applied for strange jobs. And one day our elders came to him and said, we're wanting to make some changes to our youth program, and we want you to be the youth minister. And I just laughed out loud. I laughed out loud because I thought, he went to Freed Hardeman. If he had any interest in that, he would have been a Bible major. He would have studied that. And so we prayed about it, and we thought, well, I guess we'll just give it a try and see how it goes. So we just finished we're actually going into our 4th summer. And it's been great. It's been great, but the beginning was hard. And so you'll learn this, and I'm sure you guys have already learned this, that it's just completely different. You are on call all the time when you are a ministry worker, whether you're an elder, a deacon, a preacher, a youth minister, if you're working with children's ministry, if you have a title in a church, you are on call all the time, because people don't just need you to plan the events that they're attending. They need your counsel. They need your friendship. They need your support. They need your encouragement. And those needs arise, you know, 24 hours a day. And in the beginning, I thought to myself, I've been robbed. I have been robbed of my husband. He's never home. And when he's here, his phone is always going off, and he's always answering a call or a text, and somebody's always wanting to pop in to have a really important conversation or just hang out on our couch for a little while. And I really had to pray through that in the beginning, because I thought to myself, this is not what I signed up for when I picked you or when we said yes to this job even. And I think the first really important quality to being married to somebody or working with somebody who is in ministry is to recognize that that person wasn't yours before they took that job, you know. And I might cry a little bit when I talk about this, but I have to remind myself all the time that my husband is God's person. And I get to enjoy him in our marriage and in our life together, but he's not mine. He's not mine, and he never was. He was always God's person first. And because of that, it's my privilege to walk with him in his ministry. Sometimes I feel like I'm running behind him trying to catch up. And that's fine. Those are the periods that we go through. And sometimes that means that he has to slow down a little bit and look back at me and, like, you know, assess the situation. How are we doing? Do we need to make some changes? What's going on? But I had to get my head in the right place first. He is God's person and not mine. And it's the same way with our kids. And we see biblical examples of that too. When different people are, you know, asked to sacrifice their son or to give them back as a priest, you know, there are several examples in the Bible where we're kind of thought to ourselves, that's God's person, that's God's child, not mine, and it's my privilege to be with them and to raise them and teach them and enjoy, you know, beautiful life moments with them. But in the end, it's my job to give those kids back to God, and that's what you want to do as a mother one day. You know, everybody wants to see their kids go to heaven, and everybody else that you're close to. And so, getting your head in the right place first is, I think, the most important part. There are lots of places you could go with marriage and ministry. I think probably the second place is, what's your role in that ministry, Janie? How would you describe your role in Tim's ministry? And it's probably changed over the years based on what your kids were doing and all that kind of thing.
It has. I'm a support. I'm just a support. He's really good at organizing. I know some ministers' wives help more with organizing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really great at that. I'm just good at kind of showing up and being another adult.
Okay.
At his activities. In the past, maybe, you know, I've been able to have more of a role, I guess, with the girls in some ways than he has. I'm just usually there.
Yes.
And when our children were young, I wasn't always there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just always supportive.
Absolutely. Okay, great. That was one of the roles I was going to talk about. Allison? What's your role right now?
One thing that I struggle with that I kind of work through is whatever his ministry is, if it becomes our ministry, then the time that he's gone or the time that he's working won't seem like we're apart.
Mm-hmm.
So like a lot of the stuff, like if I can go on it, like I go. So when we go to watch kids' ball games, like that
absolutely
may be our date night.
That's your date night. Right.
And not that it's a bad thing, but when I first started, to me, like, you just don't really understand that that's a lot of your life. So I think my role is more of a lot of the girl stuff, but also just being there, because that it means a lot to him.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said something about going on trips, and they're like, well, we would never see him if we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why we go, but just making it my ministry as well.
Absolutely.
Not just being married to a minister.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Remind me your name?
Casey.
What is your role?
I think, like we said earlier, being a support system for your husband.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the hardest things that I've had to see my husband go through is when he hurts because of other things in the congregation that have happened.
Absolutely.
And although you hurt because of the situation, you have to be a support and a rock for your husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't try to fix his problems. Just let him talk and
mm-hmm.
listen to him. That's what you want him to do when you have a problem.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, very good. Okay, so I kind of, in my head, I've classified wives of ministers or church workers into three categories. One of them is the hands-off partner. And I know some women who have said, they hired my husband and not me. He is the one whose name is on the paycheck. He was the one that interviewed. Those are his job responsibilities, and that's not my job. You know, and by definition, that is absolutely true. I think that the one woman I know in particular, she has said, they have younger kids, and she has said, it's not my job to go to Devos. It's not my job to host Devos. It's not my job for us to follow him around and be a part. She said, because if my husband was an accountant, I wouldn't do that. You know, I wouldn't go to his office, and we wouldn't sit there and play in his office while he was, you know, filing people's taxes. And so she has said, I'm going to treat his job like I would treat his job if it wasn't a ministry position. And I'm certainly not saying that that's right or that's wrong. The second position is more of what I've heard you ladies say. I'm a support system. So I'm not the one running the show, but I'm there to be an encouragement. I'm in the room. I'm another adult in the room. I'm another person for kids to talk to. I'm a rock. I'm a support. And so I would say, I don't know if there's more responsibility in that or if there's more presence. I don't know if that's how I would, I don't know which way to define it. And then the third is, you know, all on, the full on. And I think that, I don't know if I've met, I think I've met one woman who I would say probably meets, and she, her husband actually used to work here. Jennifer Gerhardt. Do you all know Jen and Justin Gerhardt? Okay. And to me, I think, I imagine that their conversations are like, okay, what's the next thing we need to plan? Where's the next hole? What's the next group of people that need to be ministering to? And I've known them since I was 8 and they were 16 and on. And I think that they have functioned like a pair of magnets, you know, ever since that point in time. Obviously, she's not being paid to do that work, but her mentality is, this really is our job. This is our profession. And that's how they move through every situation, it looks like. And like I said, I'm not here to grade anybody on what they choose. I think every person is different. Every personality is different. Every marriage relationship is different. And definitely churches have their own personalities, right? And so different congregations expect different things of ministers and from their wives and all those kinds of things. What I have noticed is if your position is that's his ministry and that's his job, and if he was an accountant, I wouldn't go to work with him, and so I'm not going to go to work with him just because he's a minister. What I've seen there is men who feel like losers a lot of the time. They always lose because they have to pick between the responsibility that God has given them to minister to others and between this family that they chose to have and that they want to have and that they love. And so if they pick the passion that God has put in them, they feel like their family is losing. And if they pick their family, they feel like they're not serving God the way they're supposed to. And, you know, that's hard. We were at a youth rally a couple weeks ago, and I'm there with my diaper bag and my 8-month-old and my 3-year-old and my 16-year-old, and we're just, you know, toting along, doing our thing. And one of the gentlemen came up to me, and he said, man, I wish my kids would come to something. And I thought, you know, I feel bad for him. I feel a little bad for him. I don't know his wife, and I don't know why they choose to work things that way, and so I'm not going to make any assumptions about that, but it looks to me like that's a hard position for that family to be in. The second one, we talked about, you know, present, supportive. I think that's great, and there have been times where my husband has said, are you going to this function? And I'll say, well, you know, it runs into bedtime and you're going to be so busy, we probably won't even see you. And he has said, but when I look up and I see you in the room, that makes me feel good. And I thought, really? That really does it? Like, I feel like you don't even notice when I'm there a lot of the time. And he said, you know, I know I'm so busy sometimes that I completely ignore you, but I know that you're there and that makes me feel good. And so I thought to myself, that's who I want to be. I want to be present. At the very least, I want to be in attendance for the things that are realistic, that work with our kids' schedules. We had a Super Bowl party last night after the evening service. And so there were several other churches that came and visited, and they had, you know, the big screen up and TVs and pizza and all that kind of stuff. And I used to think that it was my job to help set up the tables and the chairs and to help, you know, line out all the pizzas and plates and serve kids and pick up their trash. And, you know, I'm like a little robot, and I would come home like, I'm so tired, you know, and where's Phoenix? Where is he? And I realized I'm doing too much right now for what, you know, that's not even what he asked me to do. That's what the parents are doing. That's what our youth deacon, that's what he's doing. That's what, you know, people whose kids are grown, your age, you know, that's what those people are doing. That's not what my husband needs from me right now. He just wants me to be in the room. He wants me to be present, mentally present. I think he sees support when he sees me there. I think he feels like he's not missing anything that's going on with us. If we were home, our little girl could be crawling for the first time and he'd be missing that. And I think when he knows we're in the room, he knows he's not missing, you know, a big pivotal family moment. And so that's kind of where we are right now. This next spot, you know, kind of all on, we're on board, we're driving this train together. This is a tandem bicycle, and we're both pedaling to make it go. I think that that's probably a position that you can move in and out of, based on different seasons of your life. And Janie, I would guess that this is a place that you have been in and out of. When your kids are younger, it's probably harder. If you're a full-time student, you know, when we first got married, I was a full-time student getting my master's degree, and that was a hard time for me to be, you know, full on. You know, probably depending on what your work schedule and different health issues you may have and other responsibilities you have, I think this is one that you can move in and out of. But I think there have been times where I've said, you know, this is a good time for me to be teaching a 13-week Bible class with the girls, or getting together with them every other Thursday night for girls' studies, or, you know, tons of other things that I could or couldn't be a part of. But there are times when I'm in a position to be more help, you know, to help him plan, to help him execute, to get different events off the ground and running and all those kinds of things. I would say that if that's your personality, if that's what you can do and want to do, and you all work well together in that ministry, go for it. You know, go for it. But don't let that be your, I have to be that. You know, don't let that be, if I'm not teaching every girls class that happens, and I'm not planning six or seven things at a time, I'm not being a good minister's wife. I don't think that's true. I think the most important thing you can do for your husband is to show him support, verbal support, support by your presence. If he comes to you and says, this young lady is having such a hard time and I don't know how to talk to her about that, well, then you say, I can do that. You know, if you don't know that young lady, you go and start talking to her at church. Develop have a few conversations with her. Make a friendship, and not to execute an order from your husband, but more because you're a Christian and you understand that there's a need there that you may be better qualified to meet because of your gender or your experience or, you know, any number of things. I think that there was a point in time where we had to address modesty with our girls. And Eric, you know, was just looking at things on Facebook, and he said, I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can go up to a handful of girls and say, the way you dress looks sexy. He's like, I think that would sound gross coming from me as their youth minister, as a 30-year-old man. And he said, but that's what I think. You know, when they come in the door, you know, I try to look up or away, or when I see their pictures, I try to click through it really quickly. He said, and if I think it, I know that the boys that are their age are thinking. And I thought, you know, I don't want you to have that conversation, because if a 30-year-old man had that conversation with our daughter one day, it would creep me out. So I volunteer for that. You know, I'll make those phone calls. So I think that you don't have to be working to the caliber of a full-time minister to be a good ministry tool. And I think if your eyes are open for those opportunities, and if your attitude is in the right place, and if you have a willingness to participate and help, you will be that tool. You'll be that tool that God needs you to be, and that your husband needs you to be, and that that the elders and parents and everybody in your congregation is hoping you'll be when they hire your husband, you know. If you guys don't plan on marrying ministers, this is still a good thing, because your husbands one day might be deacons or elders or preachers. And if they're none of those things, you know that girls in middle school and high school need encouragement from any good Christian woman they can find it from. You know, that's how I ended up being a strong Christian person. So this applies to you even.
Older ministers' wife, I love plugging in the younger ones.
Yes.
I think the girls look at me and they think, you know, Miss Janie's 53 and she doesn't even want to sin anymore. You know,
she doesn't want to sin anymore. She is no longer tempted.
So I love having, you know, younger women that can be the mentor.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. That's funny. Miss Janie doesn't want to sin anymore. She's lost her desire.
I was just going to say,
please.
My husband and I just started a new work in Hamilton within a month, but back in November when we went to try out, they asked me to teach a girls' class, which I was fine with, but they also asked me to come into the elders' meeting when they met with Stephen.
Uh-huh.
And I was terrified. And they talked to him, but then they asked me, they said, what will be your role? Mm-hmm. In this ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And my first response was a support system for my husband.
Yes.
A support system for these girls.
Yeah.
And so that terrified me to go in there, because mm-hmm. I didn't know what they were going to say, but that's something you have to be prepared for too.
Yeah, absolutely.
They'll want to know.
Yeah. Yes.
I've been the intern at the Beltline Church of Christ for the last two summers.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've noticed so much is that Scott Bailey, his wife Rachel, has, even though she has a full-time job as a teacher and three kids, the girls look to her mm-hmm. more than anyone else, any other woman, because she has that role as the youth minister's
yes.
wife. And she puts herself out there saying, even though I have a billion things to do,
mm-hmm.
I will teach this class, I will tell you, you can come to my house and
yes.
talk to me. And I think it's important that they know that, even though mm-hmm. you are busy.
And that they know that because of her attitude and the way she treats them, the way she interacts with them. And you can very quickly send those signals one way or the other. I'm interested in you or I'm not interested in you. And so know that, you know, if you want to seem approachable, intentionally be approachable, you know, be conversational. If you know, sometimes I listen to conversations with these kids and I think, you can't really think that's important. You know, really, you can't really think that's important. But if I roll my eyes and walk away, they're going to think, she's not interested in me. She's a snob, maybe. And so there are times where I think this is what's important to them. So I want to listen the way I'd want them to listen to me, you know, if I were talking about something that they didn't care about, but I did. You know, it's a lot of, you know, basic Christian principles, showing kindness, showing love, you know, just being present with people, being present with them, putting your phone down and talking to them in the face. That's where they're going to learn to put their phones down and look at you and talk, you know. So if you're married and you already find yourself in the whirlwind of what ministry is, you know, maybe one or two nights a week you're at a basketball game, you've got a Devo going on, there's a elders, deacons, and preachers meeting, and there's, you know, one or two weekends a month you've got random fun night, or you're over, you know, at golf for the weekend, and then summer, you know, there's camps here and there and mission trips and all those kinds of things. If you're in that spot, you need to know how to take care of your marriage. You know, because if you don't know how to take care of your marriage, or you do, but you think, we're smart and we love each other and this is just going to come together and stay looking nice, you know, it doesn't happen. Good marriages do not happen by accident. Healthy marriages do not happen by accident. There's a ton of intentionality in that. And so I think first is having good boundaries. You know, what are your husband's responsibilities? It's clear to know that on the front end. What do parents expect of him? And what do kids expect of him? And, you know, sometimes my husband will get a text in the middle, you know, 10, 11, 12 o'clock. That's the middle of the night for me. 10, 11 o'clock, 12 at night. You know, can you talk? Well, if someone says, I mean, he's going to answer it right away. What do you need? What's going on? Well, sometimes they, you know, what time is such and such an event tomorrow night? Now, that's not important. You know, at 12 o'clock at night, that's not important. And he has learned to set some boundaries around that, you know. And if that's the question, sometimes he won't answer it. Sometimes he'll say, you know, check the website, check the bulletin, ask a friend. You know, there's six other ways you could get this information at midnight, and I shouldn't be your first resource. But other times it's, my parents are fighting and I don't know what to do. Well, you know, that's something he needs to respond to, and I don't need to look at him and say, can you be quiet? I'm trying to sleep. You know, or if he gets up out of bed, which has happened several times, you know, I need to go to so-and-so's house. They're having a hard time. They need to talk. You know, the last thing I need to do is go, we just got in bed. You know, even though that's what I think sometimes. I think, you were just at something. Stay home with me. Be home with me. But that's an attitude I've had to tell myself. This is his job. Those are his responsibilities. And it's a privilege to be picked. You know, when a kid needs somebody, it's a privilege if they pick you. And so I've tried to tell myself, well, go on and drive safe and let me know when you get home. You know, and I'll, you know, ask him about it in the morning. How did it go? You know, did you feel like you were helpful? Do I need to follow up with their mom sometime today and check in and see what's going on? Those kinds of things. But so setting some boundaries. And once you know what your elders expect of you and what the parents and kids need from you, then it's easier to say, okay, here's what we need to do as a family then. Something we started last year is Monday night is family night, our family night. So he does not ever plan anything on Monday night. No, there will never be a Devo or a youth activity or a whatever. And if another church plans something on Monday night, he'll tell the kids, you guys are welcome to go, and your parents can take you, but that's our family night. And it took 2.5 years for us to figure out we needed to do that, because we kept trying to say, when can we go on a date? And it was just never consistent. And we'd say, you know, Phoenix would look up and say, are we going somewhere tonight? But, well, you know, I want to be able to say, nope, it's Monday. We stay home on Mondays. You know, this is, what do you want to do tonight, Phoenix? Or we have a 16-year-old also. Seth, is there something you'd want to do tonight that would be fun? And so we've realized one night, we can carve out one night that's just ours. And every now and then, the elders will plan something on Monday night. And he'll go, and I don't chew him out for it, and I'm not bitter either. But I think to myself, that's the most consistent thing we have. And so, you know, I kind of plan on that. I know I'm going to cook dinner. I'm going to cook something everybody likes. I'm going to, you know, pull a game down, and we might get to the game and play it, and we might not. But we know we're going to be together on that night. So having boundaries and learning when to say yes, say no, encouraging your husband to delegate responsibilities. I don't know what you're thinking, but I know, but I see the look on your face. That's a hard thing to do. When you feel like you are responsible for the spiritual growth of another individual, that's huge. When you feel like you're responsible for the spiritual growth of 10 or 15 or 100 kids or however big your husband's ministry is, that's even bigger. And not knowing, you know, what... when to say yes, when to say no. That's just, it's a huge responsibility. And I have seen my husband get in the place where he felt like he needed to be teaching every Bible class to make sure that he was addressing what he knew the kids needed at that point in time, or to make sure that he knew it was being delivered in a way that the kids, you know, where they weren't bored, like, oh, that person, I'm not even going to listen. I'm not even going to go to Bible class, you know. And I said to him, you cannot be everything for every kid in this group. And I said, there has to be a handful of men in our congregation who would grow spiritually from teaching a Bible class, who would relate well to our kids, who would be another support system for them if they had the opportunity to build relationships with them. Like, you cannot take that all on. You have got to delegate some of your responsibilities. Every third Sunday of the month we have a Devo, and so we'll ask different people from our congregation to host it. So it's at their home. They prepare the meal. The kids love it. You know, it's Sunday night after church, so they're all starving. They like being together. We hop on the bus and go. But he used to do the Devo for every one of those, and I said, you know, you're already teaching a Bible class, and you're already, you know, you do the Thursday night thing. Like, maybe they're tired of hearing from you. Maybe they would love to hear somebody else talk. So ask someone. Go to some guys in the congregation that you feel like are still relatable to our kids, whatever that means, and who would trust them with the spiritual responsibility of teaching the truth and love and all those kinds of things, and ask them. Give them the opportunity to grow. Give our kids the opportunity to see somebody else and to enjoy somebody else and establish new relationships. You know, encourage your husbands to delegate. That's important. Am I out of time? Okay. So encourage them to delegate and let them know, you know, this is a huge responsibility that you have, but it's not only your responsibility. It's their parents' responsibility too, and it's really the responsibility of every other member at your church to be involved and to be helping and teaching others. So I guess that's helping them change their perspective sometimes if they get just too narrow focused on this is all me and this is huge and, you know, they're under that weight and that pressure all the time. Kind of remind them and let them know there are people who can help and who want to. They just need to be willing to relinquish a little bit of control and ask, you know, ask for help. The other thing is your support system as ladies and as a family. When Eric first started working in ministry, I went to every one of his Bible classes for about a year. And then I thought to myself, I need to have an adult conversation really bad. I need to talk to a grown-up. And I thought, okay, there has to be some balance here where I can go support him and teach in classes, where I can also go get fed spiritually. I was in a different place than a 16-year-old. I needed to hear different things. I needed to hear what my peers were going through and what they were doing in some of the difficult situations that I found myself in. And so we just kind of agreed that he would teach one class a quarter, and then he would attend a class a quarter. And I would I would go to his class that he taught, and sometimes he'll say, this is what I'm teaching on, it's all boys, you don't need to go to that. And so then I get to go to two grown-up classes. But that we try to go to one Bible class together. And sometimes that's hard. A lot of times he comes in late because he's got to go into the youth room and make some announcements and then come in. But then, one, that means that we're sitting next to each other, opening God's Word, and that's important. We're hearing the same thing, so on the way home or later on that night or 5 days later, whenever we have the time, I can say, what did you think about that? Or he'll say, you know, what did you think about that comment? Or that doesn't that sound just like the conversation we had last week? And so then we're discussing those things together. We're growing closer to one another and closer to God. And that's important. Obviously, that's important. And so it also gives us the chance to be connected with our peers. You know, I'm 28, he's 32. We have young children. And there are a lot of people in our church that kind of fit that look right now, and we want to be connected with them. You know, we want to know what they do when their three-year-old will not stay in bed all night. You know, he gets up 15 and 16 times a night. That's what ours is doing. I want to be friends with someone so I can say, what do you lock them in their room, do you give them a sticker chart every time they stay in their room all night? They get a sticker. Like, what do you do with that? But we have had to intentionally invest in building those relationships with people. That means going to Bible class. That means going to the young families functions when they happen. Sometimes that means that we have to, you know, move something on the youth calendar or plan around that or whatever. And it's hard. We don't always get to do it. But like I said, we have to be intentional about it. If we want that support from our peers, if we want that spiritual growth with one another, we've got to be intentional about it. And so that's another thing. I feel like the third year is our golden year, maybe. we're figuring out the areas we've been starving and we're fixing it. Please, go ahead.
That's one thing that, like, you may think that even knows that you want those things. Like, we have a connect group of churches, like people are going through the same thing.
Yes.
And they would have stuff on Sunday nights, and like that was our Bible class on Sundays. Well, he was always teaching on Sunday mornings, and we had Divas on Sunday nights. So it was hard for me to feel, I felt very connected to the kids.
Right.
But we could never go to that stuff. But for him, he wasn't thinking. His job is the youth.
Right.
So I had, and once I said, like, I really think it'd be good if we were, you know, participating in some of that, he was all about it, but they're not going to read your mind about stuff.
Yes.
I was upset because I'm like, he doesn't care that I'm only around teenagers all the time.
Right.
But they just don't think about it because their job is thinking of something else.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is you just have to talk about it.
Yes.
I felt like me being supportive was just doing whatever he had suggested.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. I mean, it is being willing to do those things, but it's also being able to say, I'd like it if we did this.
Right.
And feel confident that he's not going to not want to do that.
Right.
He just doesn't think about it sometimes.
Right. Absolutely. And that's true. I'm glad you brought that up. Communication is the other part of it. There are so many times where I am at home alone with the kids during the day, and I will get mad at Eric for something, and I've decided what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it, and it's all very sassy and not Christ-like. and then I think that God kind of swoops into my head and my heart about 30 minutes before he gets home, and just kind of, you know, sometimes I think, are you really that shallow, or are you really that mad, or is that really who you want to be when he walks in the door, you know? And I'm glad I have those moments of clarity before he comes home. And I'll just think, why am I assuming that he knows I wanted that or I did not want that? Why am I assuming that he knows better? Because when I was a kid, I didn't know what my parents wanted unless they told me. And then once they told me enough times, I knew they didn't have to say it anymore. But if we've never had that conversation, or if we had it one time 6 months ago, he probably doesn't know. He probably doesn't know. And I will say that communication is so important. And we can all communicate, right? You all know how to communicate. Sometimes you communicate with the silent treatment. Sometimes you communicate with your sassy face. Sometimes you do it in your nice, kind voice. Other times you yell. I mean, there are tons of ways to communicate. We all know how to do it. But I think that if you look at what is helpful communication, what is Christ-like communication, what is respectful communication, you know, that list gets a lot more narrow. And so remembering that if something upsets you, if you think, you know, we are just too busy, there's too much stuff on the calendar, whether it's the youth calendar or the church calendar, you know, wherever your husband's ministry is, you know, don't wait until the sixth event when you're boiling to say, you know what, I've counted how many hours we've been alone together in the last month, and I've counted how many hours you've been doing other things. You know, what that tells him is you've spent a lot of time stewing over that, and you haven't said a word. You haven't said a word about it. And so instead, just kind of, you know, if we get a calendar every month that says, you know, everything we're supposed to do, and sometimes we'll look at it and go, oof, what were we thinking when we planned all that? You know, other times I go, oh, that looks like a skinny month. But most of the time it looks just about right, because we've had enough conversations where we realize this is too much, and this didn't seem like there was enough going on, but this is good. We still felt like we had time together. You felt like you were meeting everybody's needs. It wasn't too chaotic for us. There was balance and all that kind of stuff. But that happened after a lot of conversations. That happened after a lot of, you know, him being gone three consecutive weekends and me saying, I need a break. You know, I need a break from our kids, where I need you to at least be home and help me. But just, I mean, like you said, Allison, just saying, I would love it if we were doing this, or I would love it if there was a little bit less of that, or if we did it this time and this time, then we could have this time together, or, you know, whatever it is. But realizing men are not born with the ability to read minds. And you were born with the ability to speak. And so to do that kindly, at the right time, you know, probably right in the middle of an event, say, you know, where this has been a really busy day and I don't want to do this next week. You know, that's probably not the right time to do that. But just really being an open communicator. And if you feel like, you know, you say things and they fall on deaf ears, or you feel like you're not supposed to say something about it because that's ministry and that's his job or whatever, then that's probably another conversation to have. You know, any job, anything that affects your family is at least up for discussion. And of course, you know, our husbands get to make the final say on, you know, what happens and what doesn't. But I think that if you're going to them with kindness and love and saying, I miss you and I would like it if we had more time together, or I feel like, you know, it's just the two of us with a ton of kids and we don't have any social support, I think they'll be able to hear those things. Something I've tried to tell myself is not to make a comment or complaint unless I had a helpful suggestion also. Because I don't feel like it's fair to kind of throw out, I'm unhappy with the way this is happening, but then not have a suggestion for how to make it better. So I try to pair my complaints with helpful encouragement. Let's see. I was going to ask you all to dig through your purses and find something for me, but I'm getting close to time. So I'll just make my point. If you do not have something, you know, on your person, if I asked you all to give me a $100 bill right now, how many of you have one of those with you? Right. So you don't have that to give to me. You don't have it in yourself, which means you don't have it to give. Marriage works the same way, and so does ministry and friendship and all those kinds of things. If you don't have something within you, you don't have it to give. And so if you're trying to give, if you're trying to give spiritual growth to other people and you don't have it, you know, you're kind of left in an uncomfortable position. If you're trying to give time to somebody, but you're overcommitted, then you don't have it to give to them. And that works in marriage, that works in friendship, that works in ministry. You have to, if whatever it is that you're wanting to provide for other people, you have to be getting it from somewhere, right? It doesn't come out of nowhere. And so if it's your responsibility to be meeting the needs of kids, somebody needs to be meeting your needs, right? If kids need somebody to talk to, if they need a listening ear, you need that too. If they are struggling with something spiritually and they need accountability, you need that too. If you know, just that it works that way. It works that way. And I think sometimes we feel like we are endless pits of every resource, every fruit of the Spirit, every tangible thing that people need. And it's just not true. You know, it has to come from somewhere. And I think God is where those things ultimately come from. So if you're praying for those things and you're asking for those things, looking around at the people that God is putting in your life to help meet those needs for you. One of the things I can say about where we are is that our elders are fantastic. They are so encouraging. And their mindset is, if I can pack up my kids and get there, I am welcome to go anywhere Eric goes. And I love that. You know, I love that I don't feel like, you know, oh, if he goes without me, he can share a hotel room with the boys and they won't have to pay for one, you know, but if I go with him, they'll have to pay for, you know, they have said to me, that's his job, and his job is busy and his job is a lot. And we don't ever want you to feel like you need to pick between, you know, one or the other. So if you can pack it all the diapers and the snacks, then go and be there. And I think that Eric and I feel like we have time to give to the kids because there are people who have made it easier for us to have time together. And you know, I think once you get into the place where you're having kids, or I hope you did this when you were younger. Do you have kids? No. Okay. It's important to take people up on their offers to babysit your kids. They come from everywhere. You know, the kids offer a lot, but really their parents offer. Kristen watches my kids all the time, and so does her mom. When she's here at school, her mom watches my kids. But people will offer to do things for you. Say yes. You don't have to say yes every time. You don't have to say yes to every person, but say yes. Because just as much as you and your husband are a part of people's lives working in church, they feel like you are a part of their family also. You know, that's not one-sided, and I have had to learn that. If I'm an influential person in Maddie and Caitlin's life, I need to recognize that they feel that way about me, and that makes their mom feel a certain way toward me. And so when their mom says, you know, I have some leftover gummy snacks that the girls didn't like, and Phoenix, you know, can I give them to Phoenix? I don't need to, in my head, think he doesn't need gummy snacks. It's bad for his teeth. You know, I need to say yes. That would be so nice. Thank you. You know, if she says, you know, y'all live right around the corner. If you ever want to go on a date, drop the kids off and we'll play, and you know, you come get them. And I tend to think, oh, that's hard on them. Like, what if Audrina cries the whole time? And what if Phoenix gets all bashful and mopes? And, you know, I immediately start thinking about why that's inconvenient for people. But Eric is stretching me in this, saying, you know, if people are offering, it's because they want to. It's because they see us investing in their kids and they want to do the same for us. And so just having the attitude of, you know, if you have stepped into the opportunity to be important to other people, they're going to feel that way for you. And they're going to want to try to do things for you. Say yes. Say yes, because it lets them know you trust them. You value who they are. And that does a lot for people. Does anyone have specific questions? I could really talk a long time. I think that ministry is a great place to be in, for women, for men, and I think that the way you approach it makes all the difference in the world. If you feel like your ministry is draining you, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have the wrong attitude. I know that there are some churches that are hard to work with, and maybe some elderships that are hard to work with, but if you look around and you say, you know, it looks like everybody is rooting for me, And I still feel like I'm failing, maybe that's an opportunity for you to talk to some people that you trust and say, you know, I feel empty right now. I need help. Or our marriage is in a really tough spot right now. We need help. You know, do that. Ask for those things. Find a good counselor. Find a good friend. Find a good mentor. Because God's work is hard, and it doesn't end. But it does not need to be something that stifles you as a person or stifles the growth of your marriage or your ability to minister to other people. And so if you feel like you're not getting your needs met, pray about it. And then look for the opportunities that God gives you to try to, you know, work things out in a better way.
And Lonnie Jones, I think, reserves a day. A minister wants to come. I don't think he charges.
Okay.
So it's a drive to Huntsville, Alabama, but
I
think he would also do probably marriage counseling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there's tons of resources for helping your marriage stay in a good place. But I think, like I said at the beginning, a lot of it is just being intentional, recognizing what you need as a person and what your husband needs, and then figuring out a way for you all to continue to meet one another's needs while ministering. And that, honestly, that applies even if you're not married to somebody who's working in ministry. Marriage is hard no matter where you work. And so just knowing that if you're looking for the right way to use the opportunities that God has given you, you know, it will come together. It really will. So, well, I think my time is up. So, if you all don't have any specific questions, I'll end there.
I do have a question about addressing modesty. How did you do that, and how did that,
Yes. It was difficult. At first I thought I would call the young ladies and say something, and then I thought, you know, the greater issue there is their parents. Their mom either went with them to buy those clothes or let them buy those clothes or whatever. And so I went to the moms first, and I said, you know, I'm not trying to be judgmental at all, and I don't want to be hurtful, but this will probably hurt your feelings. Just, you know, I just kind of put that out there at the beginning of the conversation, and I said, you know, Eric and I were looking at pictures, and I noticed that he would not look at the pictures of your daughter, and I asked him why, and he just said he felt like that wasn't something that he needed to be looking at. And I said, you know, I consider my husband to be a pure-hearted Christian man, and if he doesn't feel like he can look at your daughter, that says something. And so I just said, you know, what was going on? It was around homecoming or prom, one or the other. And immediately one of the mothers was saying, well, she lost some weight. And so, you know, it was covering more of her, but then she got smaller. And so then the dress was lower. And I said, well, those kinds of dresses are meant to, you know, show off sexier parts of a woman's body. And so I think that probably didn't matter how much she weighed, she was going to look sexy in that. And you know, people noticed. And I think initially she said, you know, I understand. I think she felt very bad. And then I think later she got mad at me for it. But we've moved past that, and that's fine. One of the things I have tried to do with modesty, though, is usually we only talk to girls after they have worn something they shouldn't, or worn something they shouldn't several times. And so I thought, I want to be a little more proactive about that. And so I try to mail letters to the girls on a pretty regular basis, like, I love the way you dress. You know, you look cute, you look fashionable, and I think that God is also proud of the way you're wearing your clothes, too. So I just want you to know that someone noticed. So I've thought to myself, I'm going to go ahead and compliment the girls who are being modest, because they might think to themselves, I wish I could wear that, but my mom would never let me wear that, you know, or my dad would never let me, you know, whatever. And so I thought, I'm going to start to compliment the girls who are doing well. And I did have a girl, you know, somebody come up to me and say, you know, you sent letters to a bunch of the girls and you didn't send mine. And I said, well, you know, I think that's because your clothes don't always reflect, you know, what modesty looks like, you know. And I just have told the girls and their moms, if boys are looking at you and thinking, she looks classy, she looks beautiful, those are what you want to be. If they're thinking she looks hot, she looks sexy, then it's not, you know, that's not modesty. And those are hard conversations to have, because a lot of times people get defensive. But I have just kind of, and the other thing is my example. I try to say, you know, if I put something on and I'm like, oh, is that sort of whatever? You know, then I thought, that's not, if I'm even second guessing myself, then I don't need to wear it. And I've tried to make sure that I'm always setting a good example. Even if we're doing like a work day at church and we're going to be painting, you know, I don't put on a skin tight little tank top and my old running shorts. You know, I will intentionally put something on that is just because I always want to be setting that example. And what's funny, and I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I have heard some of the boys in the youth group tell Eric that they think I'm pretty. And I think it's good that they can hear boys their age call a young woman pretty who is dressed, you know, more modestly. And I think it lets them know, oh, that, you know, if Carter thinks Miss Jen is pretty when she wears that, then maybe he doesn't think I'm pretty if I'm wearing this, you know. It's hard and it's uncomfortable, and sometimes it doesn't go well, but I just feel like that's one of our responsibilities. And so I try to be very humble and say, you know, I'm not trying to be mean or anything. I'm just saying, you know, if my husband doesn't feel like he can look at your pictures of your daughter, that should say something. I'll just kind of let it go from there. But it's hard. That's a very difficult subject to talk about with young women. So,
and their moms and their grandmoms.
Yeah, for sure. So, anything else? Thank you, ladies, so much for coming. I appreciate having you.